Good morning. We continue in Sefer Shoftim. We just began the second perek. And in the first perek, we've seen the downward spiral of the Jewish people not adhering to their mission of wiping out all the Canaanites and all the other activities they had to do. And it got so bad, at the end of Perek Aleph, we saw in Pasuk Lamed Vav, the last Pasuk, it said that the boundary between the Jews and the Amorites was from Male Akrabim, from the Sela and onward. So the Malvin comments over there and he says, it was a boundary as if there were two nations who made a bris, made a treaty between each other, and they kind of demarcated the boundaries between each other, and each one has their place. So that is like rock bottom. Bad enough you didn't drive them out. It's bad enough that you're not taxing them. But you're making treaties with them now, as we'll see in the ensuing rebuke that the angel gives them. This already is really getting bad. And we did Pasuk Aleph, and we'll just review it quickly. Vayal Malach Hashem min Gilgal HaBochim, an angel of Hashem, and we said this was the Navi Pinchas. He came from Gilgal, the place that represented morality, to Bochim, and to the place of crying, which we'll soon see where the crying comes from. Vayomer, and now we have the message, and this is where we are up to. Okay, let me just get my notes ready here. This is where we are up to. And with this, we're going to be extensively going with the Malbim's commentary in the next, really through a lot of this perek. Very beautiful commentary. Vayomer, and the Navi speaking on behalf of Hashem says, Ale eschem Mitzrayim, I brought you out of Mitzrayim. And that's already one good thing I did for you guys. Okay. I already took you out of Mitzrayim. In other words, out of degradation and the lowest of Mitzrayim. It couldn't be any lower than that. It took you from the lowest to the low. And I brought you into the land that I swore to your forefathers, which is Eretz Yisrael, which means I'm bringing you to the highest of the highest places where you can be. Look at the difference of how far you've come through my graciousness. Va'omar, and I said, and the Malbim puts in between the lines as it were, he says, and after I did all that to you, I thought to myself, you would eternally be grateful to me. And you would understand how you'd be required to serve me and to praise me. And that should be never ending. And therefore, with that assumption in mind, Vomar, and I said, Lo afer brisi itchem la'olam, and I will never nullify my covenant with you. I'll never nullify that treaty that I made with you. And unfortunately, that was my plan. But unfortunately, Pasuk Beis, Vatem, and what were you supposed to do? What were you supposed to do? Vatem lo sich resu bris liyosh veharetz azos. And you should not make a covenant with the people who live in this land. Because obviously if you make a covenant with the enemies of Hashem, there's going to be a contradiction in the covenants. If Hashem said, I made a covenant with you, I would never destroy you. And, you know, echoes way back really to the brief span of Besarim that Hashem made between Avram, this week's Parsha. Covenant is a two-way deal. You're going to spread monotheism to the world, and I will take care of you guys. And now you go make treaties with those who hate Hashem. So that treaty, when you make a treaty with an Amorite and say, yeah, you could live here, there's no problem, you live in the land of Israel with us. That is in contradiction 100% to the covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people. Because it's not possible that there can be within the same person a love for Hashem and a love for those who are enemies of Hashem. You can't have it always. You can't be a politician. Right? You can't. You got to stand for something. If you stand for God, you cannot stand for the Canaanites. Plain and simple. Canaanites want everything the opposite of Hashem. Gotta make a stand, and you didn't do that. And this is why the angel came at this point, because only at the end, in Pasuk Lamed Vav, when they made a treaty with the Amorites. Okay, if you're not destroying their temples, that's bad. I mean, a lot of things are bad. When you get to the point where you're making a treaty, you know, then already, that is a total contradiction of what Hashem wants. So that's what Hashem said. So don't make any covenants with these people. Mispechoseihem titotzum. And their altars you should break. That's what I was expecting you to do. This is all the expected plan. But v'lo shematim b'koli, but you didn't listen to my voice. You didn't listen to my voice. You forgot everything I did to you. So number one, what's bad is the Navi is like giving two parts to this message. Number one, you did something bad, so you could see what the bad is. What they should have done out of gratitude to Hashem. That's number one. And mazos asisim, and what did you do? In other words, you should know that doing it was a foolish thing. In other words, there's two aspects that the Navi is bringing out over here. Number one, what you're doing is a bad thing. And number two, it's going to bring you lots of problems. Sometimes you can do something bad. Okay, but guess what? You'll still get away with it. You can do bad, you know, that's not good. Right? But, okay, at least sometimes cheaters prosper. But here, you're not going to prosper. Things are going to get much worse, as we're going to see in Pasuk Gimel. And that's leading into the second point of the prophecy. But we just need to mention one point over it. There's a number of things the Jews did wrong. So why did the Navi pick on the fact that they didn't destroy the altars, the temples, pagan temples? There were a lot of other things that was probably going on at the same time. I mean, he didn't mention, why didn't you kill out all the Canaanites? Why have you been intermarrying and assimilating with the Canaanites? That's a pretty bad thing. So why was the focus on breaking down their temples? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that the whole reason Jewish people ever worship idols, and when they did then, and what they would do now as well, you know, whenever, lo of the Yisrael avodah zarah, the Jewish people did not worship idols except for what purpose? Ela lahatir lohem arayis. To permit for themselves licentious behavior. In other words, if you're not Jewish, you don't have to be moral, right? But if you are Jewish, you have to be moral. So if you adopt non-Jewish ceremonies, which really in effect means you live a non-Jewish life, then you can become immoral. That's the whole point. That's the bottom line. It all comes back here. It's going to always ultimately come back to morality. That's the theme that's going on over here. It's all going to come back to that immorality. And therefore, it's interesting, the wording he says, v'lo shematem b'koli, mazos asisem. So look at the order over here. Lo shematem b'koli. What does that remind you of? Mazos asisem. Good. Nasa v'nishma. When we received the Torah at Sinai, we became a people, the Jewish people said, Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do and we will listen. We're so dedicated to you, Hashem. Whatever you want, we're going to do. Even if we don't understand it, we're going to do it. And then one day we hope we'll understand it. But it's not contingent upon our understanding. So it was Nasa before the Nishma. Here you don't have anything. You were told, you were explained, and lo shemata, and you didn't listen. And also, Maso says, what have you done? In other words, you haven't done either. You didn't even do the Nishma and then the Nasa. You promised to do the Nasa and then the Nishma. Here, you didn't even do the Nishma and then the Nasa. So that's really bad. That's really bad. Okay, Pasuk Gimel, so the Navi goes on, and we're going to hear now the repercussions of why what you've done isn't good even for your own personal benefit. So Hashem said, well, if that's the way you're going to be about it, well then I will respond in a way that I need to respond. So now Gimel, so you see, Aleph and most of Beis what the hope was to be. The end of Beis says you failed. Gimel now says God's response. V'gam amarti, so I too said, Lo agoresh osa mipnechem, I will not chase out these enemies from you. I will not chase them away. In other words, Hashem is saying, even if you're going to want to destroy them now, you're not going to destroy them. And what will happen because of this will be two problems. V'hoyu lochem litzidim. These people will be for you for tzidim. Tzidim means like a physical suffering, a torment. It's going to be like, you know, real problems. They're going to attack you. They're going to destroy your livestock. It's going to be real good old-fashioned secular anti-Semitism. Okay, and also, ve'lohayhem yulochem lamokish, and their gods will be for you as a stumbling block, meaning to say that will hurt you spiritually. You'll be tempted to fall spiritually by what they have. So you're going to get on both ends, physically and spiritually. You're going to lose. So this is what the Navi said, and this was the first time that this generation was getting hit over the head now by the Navi. Okay. Yes, sir.
I heard the rabbi say a few minutes ago just about non-Jews not needing to be moral, but we just had the seven Noahite laws, and there is a base level morality that applies to non-Jews, so how can we say that the non-Jews... are not
it applies to them. It applies to them, but they don't keep it.
So they do have the obligation to be moral. Just sure. Whether they do it or not, we all have the obligation.
They have the obligation. If you walked into any place in the United States and Canada, you wouldn't see it.
No, but the point is they have the obligation to be moral.
Certainly they have an obligation to be moral.
What I heard was they don't have to be moral.
Yeah, because the way they're behaving. You walk into Canaan,
okay.
they said you don't have to be moral. That's the religion of the Canaanite world is not to be moral. Just like in the United States and Canada, that's the religion, not to be moral. So that, you're right, they're supposed to be, but they don't. Once everybody rejects it, what does it mean? What does it mean now to worship in a Canaanite temple? In the land of Israel, what did it mean to worship Canaanite temple? And be moral? No. And to not be moral. And that was the lifestyle being in Canaan. So you're right. According to the letter of the law, they had to be moral. They were supposed to be moral. But they didn't adopt that religion. They didn't adopt God's religion of being a Noahide. So since they adopted the pagan religion means you don't believe in God and all that stuff, so you don't have to keep anything. And that's the issue. It's the same as it is today.
Exactly what the Jews did in this instance. They didn't listen to Hashem. They're exactly the same
thing. That's right. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Now, you have to realize that, in the context of this pasuk, that Judaism does not necessarily deny the existence of other gods. What do I mean to say? What strikes a lot of readers very strange is what did the Jewish people see in these gods? You know, okay, so we said, well, really it was just an excuse to worship, to be licentious. But that is to see something in it. To see something in this idol worship. So the truth of the matter is, we have a lot of difficulty in understanding it because a lot changed. You know, before the construction of the second temple, the men of the great assembly, after analyzing the troubles that the Jews went through in the first temple, which caused the destruction, they understood that the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination for idol worship, was extremely strong. It was extremely strong. It was a powerful drive for people to worship these idols. To such an extent that the Talmud relates to us that one day there was a rabbi in the Talmud who was discussing the topic of Menashe, who was one of the most wicked Jewish kings and led almost the entire Jewish people to idol worship. So he was, you know, speaking of Menashe in a negative way. As, you know, you're allowed to. He's a Russia. But, so that night, Menashe came to him in a dream and says, I want you to know that the drive for idol worship was so strong in my days. If you would have lived in my days, you'd have been holding onto my coattails and running after me to do it. So you don't understand. You don't understand what's going on over there. and why we don't, because the men of the Great Assembly, what they did was, and again, we can't understand exactly what that means, but they killed the drive for idol worship. They killed it. They destroyed it. They prayed to God to take it out of our psyche. To take it out of our psyche. So it was gone. So now none of us, except those in India, I understand, wherever somebody sent me, I don't have time to look at, just says how they're bringing korbanos to their idols, chais, and things like that. But most people in civilized parts of the world, they don't bow down to idols anymore. Because why? Because we don't really have that drive anymore. But there was a tremendous drive. There was, as Reb Chaim Volozhin explains in the third gate of the Nefesh HaChaim, and you're right, the English translation Nefesh HaChaim, parenthetically, skips out all those chapters. All the good stuff gets skipped out of there. But he describes the idea that, and as we talked about in the Parsha class last week, that there were very powerful kochos hatumah, forces of impurity that are in the world. And God, when he created the world, he had created positive forces, and there is the ability to access negative forces if one wants to. If one, you know, you can daven to Hashem and say, Hashem, I want you to provide for me, and I want to live in your system, and I want to live under your divine supervision. And that's what Hashem wants us to do. But in order to enable us to have a free will choice, Hashem says, but if you want to dabble in the occult, and there are ways in which you can accomplish what you want through negative means, meaning not through my auspices, but through negative forces, and I've allowed this to exist so that there is a free will choice, you definitely can. Because I'm not going to force, you know, if the only way you can get what you want in this world is by serving Hashem, then there isn't much of a relationship we have between us and Hashem. Right? If Hashem says, either you pray to me or you starve to death, and guess what? I think everybody's going to pray to God, right? You do everything I want or I won't give you anything. Well, that kind of forces the relationship. And Hashem does not want that. So Hashem says, really, you could have everything you want in this world by one or two ways. Either you go through my system, and when it's my system, I'm pretty particular. If you don't behave, you don't get as much as you want. Because what you do matters to me, and I have to discipline you. Or there's these other systems around that you could get everything you want, and maybe more. And you don't even have to be a good person either. So it's up, but you don't get me. But you don't get me. So the option is there. So you know, for example, when Avram Avinu, in next week's, in Chayisara, when he sends away his children from his wife Keturah, it says he sends away the Bnei Keturah to the east, and it says he gave them presents. He gave them presents. So Rashi there says, what was the presents? He gave them the ability to understand how to work with the Kochel Satumo, the spirits of impurity. So that's where, you know, those who suggest that in the Orient there are certain types of practices that exist, whatever. And they can do all kinds of magical, mystical things. So the idea is it really came from Avram Avinu's blessing that he gave to them. Because if you want to have a way to serve Hashem differently, it's there. Whatever. Maybe he gave them certain secrets, they distorted it, whatever. But we know that these ideas exist. And therefore there was strong forces in the land of Canaan. Real strong forces that really existed. And you could worship other idols. And that's where the focus over here is destroy their altars, because these are the places where they can access what they want without having to get Hashem. And that was a serious thing. Now, the counterbalance to that, there's always a counterbalance, always an equal and opposite forces working at hand, is that the Jewish people had Nevi'im, had prophets, who had really holy people, who were real, good, proper, righteous people. Whenever you looked at this person, you saw, there goes a tzaddik. You knew when he spoke clearly on behalf of God. The Navi was capable of doing miracles too, if necessary. And now you've got an equal, and so the question was asked, how could Jews not listen to the prophet? The answer is, because there was a very seductive power of idol worship. You know, I don't know if nowadays, if I could, you know, A lot of people, you know, come to Yiddishkeit because they're in trouble. They're in trouble, they have problems. Okay, I got problems. Maybe if I turn to God, things will get better. Okay? But you know what? A lot of people, oh, there's a new age this and a new age that. Let me try that. You know, because anything but God. What if there was new age idolatry? I mean, there is new age idolatry, but not the kind we're talking about. New age idolatry. Just come here. Give the God a few bucks. Give him an animal offering. You'll get whatever you want. I don't think anybody's going to turn to Yiddishkeit at all. What do I need it for? I'm depressed. I'm lonely. I'm poor. Worship the God of money. You'll get some money. Worship the God of immorality. You'll have a relationship with somebody. Don't worry. You get what you want. Okay. Baruch Hashem. We don't have that now. We don't have it. Why? Because we don't have prophecy. We don't have the powerful power of Hashem in our corner that's manifest. So whatever, you don't have the power, negative powers. But when we did have the great power, we went there, so we saw miracles, and you saw the land responded to the Jews. You saw how for 6 years we worked the land, and the seventh year we let it go fallow, and Hashem gives us a triple crop. You see this? Right? So isn't that convincing an argument that there's a God in the world? Yeah, but there's also these forces of impurity, and if I bow down to them, I don't have to let the land lay fallow at all. And I'll get blessed by the sun god and the rain god. And they'll take care of me too. So you can understand why people would fall. And that's why eventually the men of the great assembly said, you know what? The playing field is too tough. We got to lower the playing field. We'll lower the playing field. We can't handle it. Just can't handle it. So we lowered it. And when it got lowered, two things happened simultaneously. The drive for idol worship stopped. But also the ability of prophecy stopped. So everything went down a big notch. And that's where it is today. That's where it is today. So, but there's always, but the Talmud Yerushalmi says, even though they killed the idol, the desire for idol worship to the pagan gods, it got replaced with another idol worship. What was that? The idol worship of money and materialism that replaced it. And that's what you have today. So that's the playing field we have. So therefore, you understand that the Jews succumbed, unfortunately, and the Navi lambasts them for this. So what's the Jewish people's response in Pasuk Dalet? Big act into the text. Vayihi kidaber malach Hashem es advar ma'ela el kol b'nei Yisrael. It was when the Navi said all these words to Jewish people. Vayisu ha'am es koilom vayivku. They raised up their voices and they cried. So there's many ways of understanding what this crying was about. We could say, on the one hand, that the crying is a crying out of tshuva. So when a person cries, that's one of the elements, one of the aspects of tshuva. But as well, we know in Bamidbar, Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Yud Aleph, we find another time that the Jewish people cried. They cried when they were upset about the manna and they wanted other food. And Moshe heard them crying. And the rabbis say they weren't crying over vegetables and meat. They were crying because they were just informed that they couldn't be married to their relatives who they were married to, and they had to separate. You see, before they got the Torah, people didn't have the mitzvahs of the Torah. People were married to close relatives in Egypt. But when they got the Torah, they found out they had to divorce their wives. They weren't allowed to be married to these people. So they were crying over the relationships that were lost and over the no longer having the opportunity to have licentious behavior. So it could be that they're crying again. The rebuke of the Malach, he's prohibiting the Canaan to them. So it's kind of yeah, we understand. It's like a mixed crying over here. Like they're crying, oh, we're terrible. Oh, but being a religious Jew, we're going to have to give up all these opportunities. So, yeah, because you're going to see, this didn't help very much. It did, short term, but not long term. So they're crying. So obviously this is why, oh, so Pasuk Hey, Vayikru shem okoma hu bochim. So they called this place the place of crying, because they cried. Vayisbechu sham lashem, and then they brought offerings to Hashem. So, I mean, didn't ask them to bring an offering to Hashem. It's also a little bit difficult to understand. I just think about it now. I didn't see any commentary. So, how could they bring up Karbonos and Bochim? They had the Mishkan now in Shiloh, right? So the Mishkan was in Shiloh. If the Mishkan's in Shiloh, you can't bring Karbonos anywhere else. So I don't know, maybe it's Hora Shah, maybe it was an emergency measure, whatever. But anyway, they're bringing Karbonos, and it could be in a way to like compensate for their drive for idolatry. It's interesting, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, there's a whole discussion, which we're not going to get into now, there's a whole discussion as to what is the purpose of animal offerings. And there's a Sefer Chinuch, there's a beautiful pshat, which we've done in the past. But the Rambam says something very interesting in Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam says the reason why the Jews were given korbanos, and a lot of people argue with this reason, says because, listen, the non-Jews had their idol worship practices, so the Jews, you know, had to have that too. In other words, since the pagans were already worshiping idols, were offering animal offerings to their idols, so the Jews would have to have something as well. You know, instead of doing it to the gods, we'll do it to Hashem. So there's a lot of our Ramban, Nachmanides takes the Rambam to task. He says, what are you talking about? Just because, you know, the mitzvahs are intrinsic, they shouldn't have to do anything with anybody else in the world. And if there weren't candidates worshiping idols, right, we wouldn't have to do that. You know, it shouldn't have to be one through the other. So, but the deeper understanding of the Rambam is like this. What the Rambam means to say is that there should be a strong, strong drive to want to cleave to something that is beyond you. Right? There is this. And what the Rambam means to say is, so the non-Jews have it their way. And that's not an unreasonable thing that, you know, that there is this desire to cleave to something higher than you and to offer animals as this way of achieving that. And intrinsically, that's a human drive. It's a human drive. Now the point is, but it's got to be directed to Hashem.
Can I have a question?
And when I'm finished, you can ask. I'll let you ask in about 3 minutes. Okay. So that there is a human drive to cleave to the source of our reality, and offering animal offerings is the means to do this. And with the other commentaries that I don't have time to get into, there is a lot of reasonableness to doing this. So now, if the Jews don't have it, you know, if we don't have it to Hashem, we're going to obviously do it with the non-Jewish places because there is this drive. So, but really, it really should start with that drive to do it to Hashem. So that's what he's saying. So if Hashem is saying, listen, you're ready, you're worshiping to the gods over there, so they know, well, we're going to have to do something to compensate for that and do what's proper. It's not good enough to say we're not going to bring offerings, period, to the gods. Because our drive to do something is going to be missing. So okay, we'll do it in a kosher way. We'll do the right way and we'll bring the offerings to Hashem. Like once Hashem says, forget about what you're doing there, so they've got to do what's right. You got to bring out that drive in a positive way. So that's what they're bringing, the animal offerings, which is in the kosher way, the way that God prescribes it. So maybe, you know, once you're taking it away from them, maybe there was a Horah Shah, an emergency measure. Okay, let's right now bring our offerings to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show that, you know what, you could still have that pleasure that you were meant to have in a kosher way, and that way you should give it to Hashem. That's what I'm saying. Yes, I could ask
yes,
you.
Yes, I was suggesting that
We're not saying it's influenced by the pagan world.
No,
that's what I was just explaining. Not. That's what I spent the next 3 minutes saying. Not that way. That the questioners on the Rambam were asking the question you were asking, to which I was just addressing and saying no.
No, you did suggest that.
No, If you listen carefully, listen again to what I said. I just spent 3 minutes explaining how it's not rooted in paganism. There is a drive within the human being to cleave to something above. Hashem addresses that, and by giving a mitzvah of the Torah to bring offerings. If you don't do it to Hashem, then it's going to be misdirected in the wrong way, in a pagan way. There is this drive for the human being to want to do this. And it wasn't designed to be pagan at all. It's designed to be focused to Hashem. However, if Hashem would not have had this mitzvah, then what would have happened? It would be non-Jews, only bringing pagan worship. And then the Jews would see that, so they would go after that. Hashem said, no, part of your nature is to do this, so I'm telling you the mitzvah is to do it the right way, and therefore you won't be influenced to do it the wrong way. Yeah, Cain and Hevel. That's a good proof. Cain and Hevel. Right away, they want to give something to Hashem before Hashem even commanded them. Hashem didn't command them. So what happened? So Cain took the idea, but not correctly. He says, oh, I'm going to offer you garbage. Hevel says, I want to offer you the best. What's the best offering? A human, a living animal. He gave it to God. There was no commandment to do this. It's interesting. God did not command them. So what does that mean? I mean, intrinsically by nature, human being understands, I can get close to Hashem by offering an animal. Okay, so now if there be no Torah, what would have happened? What did happen? Before God made the commandments, right? Or they didn't listen to the commandments. What happens is the world then took Hevel's offering and this idea, and then it got distorted. So Hashem is saying, there is going to be this human drive. I've made it that. I made it the human being wants to elevate himself and cleave to something higher. So the Torah wants to have it be in the right direction. It should be to Hashem. That's why I gave him that drive. If I wouldn't have, if the Torah would not have given that mitzvah, then human beings would have all done pagan worship. That's what the Rambam is meaning to say. Yeah.
There is an explanation why they were permitted to do this.
Yeah, what is it?
The Shiloh, it says that the Ark of the Covenant was not in the tabernacle at Shiloh when this event took place. So that's why they were permitted.
Okay, so that's just have to ask now, why was it not in Shiloh?
Yeah,
that just begs the question. So, okay, good. So the Ark wasn't in Shiloh. So why was it not in Shiloh? Were they in the middle of a battle or something? I don't know. It doesn't seem that they were fighting the Canaanites. Okay, we'd need, which, did he say which commentary that is?
Meshech
Chachma. Meshech Chachma. Okay, I'll have to look that up. Shkoyach.
Rabbi?
Yes, ma'am.
It's also referring here to how we make. So quick, they already started to do the mukesh of the Elohim will be a mukesh to you.
Like why?
Because the Malach coming will tell them that how they, he will. Telling them that you're gonna be they will be the tzidim, Elohim,
right.
And a sentence after he tells them that, they're already starting to do exactly what he says.
Why?
Because they're already working
place. Lashem. No, this is Lashem. This is the right place.
But still, they should not do it there. They should not
I don't know.
In the Aron HaKodesh.
Okay, so we have to look. We have to look and see why that wasn't there.
No, but it's just
you see the Mitzudas. Yeah, I understand. You see, Mitzudas David says that they regretted their actions and therefore they brought a korban to pacify Hashem. They want to bring korban to Hashem. We have to understand why the Mishkan, why the Aron wasn't in Shiloh. We have to know why. But assuming it was kosher, okay, you know. Maybe we'll have to see. Maybe we want to argue on the Meshech Chachma. It's a mistake. Maybe. We'd have to look further. I didn't see anybody on the spot comment, so we'll have to see. The Meshech Chachma, there's no Meshech Chachma on Navi. It's in the Chumash. So they have to, he probably said, did he say where the Meshech Chachma is? Did he say where it is?
Yeah, Dvarim.
Dvarim?
Yeah.
Okay, so that narrows it down to a whole book.
No, it knows exactly where.
Yeah? Okay, good. Okay, so we'll see what we can find over there. Alright, let's move on now to Pasuk Vav. So now, Pasuk Vav to Pasuk Yud, the next five psukim, again, is a flashback. We had one in Perek Aleph, I got one in Perek Beis. Through Vav and Yud is a flashback, and there's a lot of similarities. What we're gonna read now was nearly identical to what is at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, which was in Perek Chaf Dalet, Psukim, right at the end, right at the end. Right at the end. We're going to parallel this. You might want to, you know, put a marker back in Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Chav Tes through Lamed Aleph. We'll see. It's very similar. So let's read these psukim, and we'll just get into it today, and then we'll get into it in much greater detail tomorrow. Okay, Pasuk Vav. Vayishalach Yoshua Esom, and Yeshua sent the people away. Well, obviously that's got to be a flashback. Yeshua is not alive. Okay. So, we know at the end of Sefer Yeshua, Yeshua gave a farewell address to the Jewish people. And when he finished that farewell address, that's what he did. So now, flip back to Sefer Yeshua first. I guess it'll work out better. Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Chav Ches. And this is all after he gives them the final speech. They make a final speech. And he tells them, you know, and they pass, there's a whole rock over there. He says, it should be a witness that you shouldn't deny, etc. All these things, etc. etc. So then it says there, Perek Chav Dalet, chapter 24, verse 28. Look at the words exactly. Vayishalach Yeshua sa'am ish l'nachlaso. Yeshua sent the nation, each man, to his portion. He says, okay, now go home and start building up the land. Go back to your portions and build up the land. And in Pasuk Chav Tes, Vayi Acharei Advar Me'ela, was after these things, Vayamas Yeshua Ben Nun Eved Hashem, Yeshua Ben Nun passed away, the servant of Hashem, Ben Me'ev Es Hashem, 110 years old. Pasuk Lamed, Vayikbiru Oso, Begvul Nachloso, Betimna Serach, Asher Bahar Ephraim. They buried him in his tribal portion in a place called Timnas Serach, which is in the mountain of Ephraim, Mitzpon Lahar Gosh, north of Har Gosh, Mount Gosh. Lamed Aleph, Yavod Yisrael Hashem Kol Yimei Yehoshua, and the Jewish people served Hashem all the days of Yeshua. V'chol Yimei Eskenim, and all the days of the elders, Asher Arichu Yomim Achrei Yeshua, who had extended days after Yeshua. V'asher Yadu Eis Kol Maaseh Hashem, and they knew all the actions of Hashem, the miracles that Hashem did, Asher Esol Esol that He did to the Jewish people. Okay, you got that? That was old stuff. Now we come back to our section here. How similar does it sound? It's a flashback. Pasuk Vav. I'll read, but it's a little bit longer. Vayishalach Yeshua Sa'am. Yeshua sent the people. Vayelchu b'nei Yisrael. Ish l'nach l'sol. Resh l'saretz. And all the Jewish people, every man went back to his tribal portion to inhabit the land. To inherit the land. But it's the same idea. Same idea. Vayavdu ames Hashem kol yimei Yeshua. The people served Yeshua, Hashem, all the days of Yeshua. V'chol yimei Ezekim, and all the days of the elders. Asher harichu yomim acharei Yeshua. Who had extended days after Yeshua. It's interesting, there's an extra vav in the name Yehoshua over here that you don't find anywhere else in the Torah. There's a second vav between the shin and the ayin, which is intriguing. Asher ra'u eis kol maaseh Hashem agadol asher asu Yisrael. So, and they, these people, they saw the actions of, the great actions of Hashem that He did for the Jewish people. Ches, Vayomas Yeshua ben Nun Eved Hashem, Yeshua ben Nun passed away, servant of Hashem, Ben Me'ev Es Hashem, 110 years old, Pasuk Tes, V'yikbir So, V'kvul Nach L'So, they buried him at the edge of his territory, V'timnas Cheres, in a place called Timnas Cheres, not Timnas Serach. Same letters, just around, and again, it's spelling word cheres, which is what? Earthenware. Coming back to the theory. Yeah. Now the Chazal say, over here, they say, when a person dies, he's like a broken earthenware vessel. Which is true, but again, somehow if it's put into this book, into this parak, half the Jewish people are not dealing with the idols properly, so the cheres comes back. The earthenware, that which the Jews were supposed to break and destroy, is coming back to haunt them. Okay, he's buried in Har Ephraim, Mitzvon Har Gosh, to the north of Mount Gosh. V'gam kol had, now here's a totally extra pasuk. V'gam kol adora hu nesfu el avosof. And all this generation was gathered up to its fathers, that generation. V'yokom dor acher achareim. And this is all brand new now. And a new generation came up after them, asher lo yodu es Hashem, that did not know Hashem. The Gamas Hamas Asher Asis on the things he did to the Jewish people. Because now all the elders passed away, that old generation was gone, right? This is now a while now. Remember, Yeshua was the leader for 28 years. The big miracles happened in the first 7 years. And he died, and then those who were the elders also died. So it's a new generation that were not first-hand observers as mature adults with the right seichel of all the miracles that happened. Okay. So the question is, like, so what's this flashback doing over here? What's this flashback doing? Or what's the purpose of this flashback? Right? Because we've been talking about the rebuke that the angel gave them, and now they felt bad about it, that charata. Now we're going back to describing what happened when Yeshua died. So, like, what's the purpose of this? And this will bring us back to the question that Shelley asked before. And the obvious question that has to be asked is, how could it be that Jewish people could sin like this? After all that happened, how could the Jewish people sin like this? So, we will discuss tomorrow with the Sefer Parshas Sefer Vim. He's going to say that these five psukim is the express intent of these psukim is to explain how that happened. But you have to have a very, very sophisticated reading of the text. But before we get there, let's just point out a few important things that we need just in terms of the text itself. We know there was something very bad that is hinted to in these psukim, especially in Pasuk Zion. And in Pasuk Tes, which was mentioned before as well. It says that the elders who extended Harichu Yomim Achre Yeshua, they had extended days after Yeshua. It didn't say Harichu Shanim, they extended years after Yeshua. From this we learn that those who are lazy in the eulogizing of a tzaddik when he dies, their days are cut short. And if you recall, if you remember when we learned Yeshua, we spent a lot of time on this. I rechecked on our website, but a few lessons on this idea. That when Yeshua died, the Jewish people were not eulogizing him the way they should have. When he died, it didn't say that they mourned and cried for 30 days like they did for Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, since they didn't eulogize him properly, two things happened. Number one, it mentions that he was buried to the north of Mount Goash. And the rabbi said, we looked throughout all the maps of Israel, there's no place called Mount Goash. So they say the word Goash means a volcanic eruption. So when Yeshua died and the Jewish people did not eulogize him properly, God punished the land. And you imagine now, the Jews, if you've never seen a volcano in your life, it could be scary. It's also those nice docile mountains in Eretz Yisrael, which wouldn't hurt a fly. So there was some mountain over there, and it started to volcanically erupt. Right? Why? God was upset with the Jewish people that they didn't eulogize Yeshua properly. So they already threatened to destroy them. That was one problem. So after that, they got scared. It's okay. They put up by his matzeva, by the monument, they put a picture of the sun to say, woe to the man who was able to have the sun stand still. He's not with us anymore. Try to compensate. That was bad. Gosh also comes to the word being lazy. And the second thing that happened as a result is that the elders did not have such a long life as they could have. They extended days but did not extend years because they did not eulogize him properly, which only makes sense. If you don't eulogize a person properly, that means you really are not, focusing on a person's life. You're not evaluating. You're not saying, listen, this is what he meant to us. The person's no longer with us. He accomplished so much. There's so much missing now. We have to make up for what's missing. That's what the purpose of eulogies is about. This force isn't with us anymore. Now each of us have to take on part of this role. If you don't eulogize, you go, well, you know, that was then. This is now. It's not such a big deal. So Hashem says, okay, so if his life was such a big deal, I guess your life isn't such a big deal either. And you can go early too. Okay, this is just a taste of what's coming up tomorrow. So tomorrow we will give a full treatment of this subject and we will have a better understanding as to why things fell apart at this time. Okay, I'll lift the test.